Hi, I'm Romy and I'm in Stockholm in Fredrik's amazing apartment. I'm very happy to be here.
Welcome, Romy.
Thank you.
And thanks for Midair, your debut solo album. I was quite blown away by it, actually, when I heard it. It's a great, joyous, danceable record, but it's quite sad at the same time.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed listening to it.
Does that come naturally to you, like mixing what's danceable and what's sad?
I think that emotions within dance music has been like an obsession of mine, like subconsciously since I was a child. And I think that finding that moment, that sort of middle ground between euphoria and maybe more longing or sadness, or like just the spectrum of emotions, as well as being able to dance, is like something that I'm fascinated with and have been very specifically on this project.
I remember when you toured with your band, the XX, you would DJ after some shows, and some people were, mind-boggled that you would play so commercial and bouncy house tracks.
Yeah.
Because the XX had sort of a sort of gloomy image.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that the tracks that you would pick as a DJ did not match what was going on during the concert. Did people think that you were, being ironic or something?
I found that quite challenging, actually, because I've loved DJing since I was a teenager, and I used to DJ in a queer club in London. And at that time, I played a lot of the like big anthemic pop songs that I really loved that were usually played in that club, and that people were enjoying there without irony, just like celebrating good pop music. So when the XX started touring and a couple of opportunities came up to DJ the after party, I was excited to do it, and I played the music I had been playing, and I got sort of challenged by people that were coming to see the XX expecting me and the Oliver and Jamie to be a certain way, and for us to only listen to very dark and moody music, and then for me to be playing this big joyful pop music. I got a few people asked me if I was kind of taking the piss or like being ironic. And I found it quite confronting, because I was like, no, I love this music. But I got a bit in my head about it, because at that time I was only 20. So like I was just, I didn't want to do anything to, I feel like I wish I'd just been like, I don't care, I just want to play this music. But I got quite self-conscious. And now as I've gotten older, I've just re-embraced that love for my love of pop music.
It's funny when, artists who are perceived as kind of moody or gloomy, they might be very into pop music. I did this podcast with Wayne Hussey from an old gothic group called The Mission,
mm-hmm.
and he was in the Sisters of Mercy in the 80s, and they would cover ABBA, Gimme Gimme, and the people thought that they were taking the piss, but they actually loved ABBA.
Yeah, right. I think that I've always really loved and assumed that everyone has quite an open mind for music, but sometimes it's not the case. Like I think that I really love all types of genres, and I think if a song has great lyrics and a great melody, I don't care what the genre is, and I love being fluid with kind of dancing between the different genres. And I think I've noticed in the past 10-12 years since I first started touring and first started releasing music, that people seem to be more open and like less restricted in like, oh, you make this music, you must only listen to this music, which I think is refreshing. This is Robin's incredible song, Dancing on My Own. Somebody said you got a new friend. Does she love you better than I can?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I still get goosebumps from that bass line.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. It's it really is an incredible song, and I think is just an anthem now at this point in for me and my friends and for loads of people. But it's a very special song.
It's also basically a song about stalking someone who has broken up with you.
Yeah,
it's sort of dark if you...
Yeah.
If the melody wasn't so sweet, it would come across as something different for us.
Yeah, it's very true. It's true, and I you know, I love that juxtaposition of like this kind of, you know, like you say, quite an intense, obsessive love song, kind of, but melodically, and you know, the kind of the whole track kind of uplifts you in a different energy, and like that kind of juxtaposition is something I'm fascinated with.
It's kind of like you know, Every Breath You Take by The Police.
Yes,
it's the same topic.
Yeah, definitely.
But you played with Robin in London in 2017.
Yes.
You brought her on stage and you did With Every Heartbeat together.
Yes. Yeah.
What was that like?
Oh, that was a dream come true for me. It's been so wonderful getting to have a few conversations and you know, get to sing with Robin. Was just like one of the my dreams come true. And she's so lovely and been so supportive of me doing this solo project. I've asked her like questions along the way, and she's been really just like very, she's a real role model to me.
She's also kind of been interested in, you know, the subversive power of nightclubs. Mm-hmm. Her last album was very much about, you know, finding freedom on the dance floor.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think I think she's been combining, you know, songwriting and dance music and referencing the club for such a long time and doing it in such an effortless way. It was, yeah, I mean, I loved her last album and the kind of, and she did a really amazing collection of remixes as well. That was really great. So as a DJ to then be able to play out some of these songs from the album in, you know, I think the whole project was exciting to me.
I think you described your album Midair somewhere as a love letter to the queer clubs that you would go to as a teenager. What places did you go to then?
So when I first started going out in London, it's a club, it's not open anymore. It's now Tottenham Court Road train station, but it was called Ghetto, and it was just a small basement club. And I used to go there. I went there for the first time with Oliver from the XX, and we were really happy to get in. We were probably about 16. And so it was quite exciting, underage, but the people...
But was he as tall back then as
he was very now? Tall, yes. Yeah, that helped. Yeah, he's always... from about age of 14, he's been very tall, so that helped. And we had that experience together, and some of the people I met on that first night are still some of my best friends.
You and Oliver know each other since a very, very long time. Were your parents friends or something?
So Oliver and I met at nursery school when we were three. I was confused. I didn't know if our parents were friends first or if we became friends, but Oliver's mum told me that, apparently like Oliver and I became friends naturally, like we gravitated towards each other at nursery school. And then through that, our parents became friends. So that is lovely to me that we naturally found each other.
So what are your first like clear memories of being his friend?
It's difficult at that age, because I've got, there's a collection of like very lovely photos. So, you know, I think it's being that young, I think it's maybe, I can't tell if it's the memory or the photo, but we're just like always seem to be side by side, like doing something. Like there's one of us like writing, like doing like a writing thing. So it's quite cute. It's like us writing together, us playing music together in the, you know, sort of the music class at school. And it's lovely to have those photos and see that we were just kind of hanging out and being creative, which is like what we've done most of our lives.
Did you have any bands before the XX?
No, we were just, it was something that I think we both were about 14 and just really falling in love with music, wanting to go to gigs and being obsessed with other bands and, you know, sort of getting to the stage where maybe we were thinking, can we do this ourselves? And it was very much just playing around with my friend and feeling excited about just giving it a try ourselves. But we both were very shy, so I think neither of us really, I don't know, the fact that we ended up on the stage is still quite a surprise to me.
But it's amazing how, you know, shyness can become something of a power on stage, because you seemed shy on stage, and that just made the whole spectacle greater in a way.
Really? I was saying to some friends the other day, we were talking about how documented everything is now, I guess, if you're a new artist. And I was laughing, saying I'm kind of grateful that some of those early gigs from the XX are not on YouTube.
What were they like?
I don't think that we looked up very much. I would say that I really wanted to be there, but I don't necessarily know if I looked like I wanted to be there. And there was this kind of like contradictional pull between really, really wanting to perform live and sort of being part of a kind of era, I think, with MySpace and live music, where everybody just played live. It was very much expected that you did that, I felt like, in our group of friends. But I think we did it, but it just took us maybe about 5 years to really relax on stage and feel like we looked like we were having fun. Now I love being on stage. It took me a few years to get there.
And it felt very live, you know, especially with Jamie, mm-hmm, playing the electronic drums live, or playing the drum machine.
Yep.
You know, he didn't have the rhythms pre-programmed or anything.
No.
And it's, you know, I've rarely seen people do that.
Yeah, we never played with click or anything. It's always just been, initially in the beginning, before Jamie joined, you know, Oliver and I have known Jamie since we were 11. You know, so
we're old friends as well.
Yeah, so, you know, when Oliver and I went, Oliver and I met at nursery, we went to primary school together, and then at secondary school, on our first day, we met Jamie, and then we've been best friends ever since. And he was a live drummer and into sort of like producing beats, and, you know, inspired by RJD2 and like these kind of more like hip hop beat makers. And at the time Oliver and I started making music together, we said, Jamie, would you like to be the drummer? And he said no. And I was like, he said he didn't think he was a good enough drummer. So that's when I was like, okay, we're going to have to, we made our own electronic beats and you put them on a CD, and then the sound engineer would have to press track one, and then the beat would play. And then eventually Jamie started making the beats that went on the CD. And eventually I was like, please, Jamie, like, please. And then he had an MPC for his birthday, and then he started just playing it in the rehearsal room. And I was like, that is so much better. And I think from that moment on, having that fluidity of being able to all go out of time together was a huge moment for us.
And you all went to Elliott School in Putney in, yep, South London. I read that the former students include bands like Hot Chip and artists like Burial and Fortet. Mm. And also Pierce Brosnan once went there, James Bond. What was that school like? Was it very creative?
The school... it's been amazing to kind of travel around and speak about this school, because, you know, when you're there, it's not really anything special. I'm grateful for it. I loved growing up in London. You know, it was a really amazing group of different people from all different backgrounds, different parts of the world, different cultures. Like, I loved that about growing up in London. And that found that very inspiring, and it was just the norm for us, you know, to be in this big school with loads of different people. And that really had an influence on me. In so many ways. But I wouldn't say that there was like lots of care and attention given to the students. It was a lot of kids, and there was a lot of a lot of chaos. So we were kind of left alone a lot. And I think because I was left alone in the music department, it became something that I was drawn to do rather than taught to do.
So what kind of chaos were you trying to avoid by staying in the music room?
I don't know. It's just like, it was just like a hectic school. It was fun, but it was just so many kids and like so much like, there was a lot of, there was like a lot of, what do I say? In the music department, there probably was like a lot of kids just like banging on the keyboards. So then like the teacher's focusing on those kids. So then I was like left alone to sort of like discover things. And I really think that with any creative, being taught creative things, sometimes if you're not taught it, if you seek it and then you learn it and you can seek out more help, it can be a great way to discover music rather than learning it.
Is that why it became so minimal? But you would only like use things that you had mastered.
A big part of the whole sound of the XX is that we really just wanted it to be what we could play live. So what we recorded was literally the elements that we were playing live in the pub or in wherever we'd been playing the weekend before. So it was a simple guitar line that I could play and sing. Same for Oliver. And, a simple keyboard part on a Casio keyboard. That's the one keyboard we used on the first album. It's a tiny children's Casio keyboard. And then Jamie would play samples and beats that he'd made and put on his MPC. So that was it. The whole album is, as it sounded live, put onto an album. And that came from our time when I learned to use the multi-track recorder in the music room at school. You know, we only had 8 tracks. So it kind of led to that kind of simplicity, which I'm really grateful for, because now, you know, making this album, you know, you have infinite layers, infinite tracks, and I enjoyed having the complete freedom of that. But then I've noticed now, trying to figure it out live, trying to sing it live, is it's a challenge, but I enjoyed the challenge. This song is called La Vita by Beverly Glenn Copeland.
Who's Beverly Glenn Copeland?
Beverly Glenn Copeland is an incredible artist that I was introduced to by Robin. Glenn, he is now, I believe he's in his 80s and has been making incredible music for a long time. And I am amazed I'm just fascinated to be like discovering all of this music that he's made. And I'm so grateful to Robin for introducing me to this music. I first heard this music in Stockholm, and so and the reason
in a club or at Robin's place?
Yeah, so I was just looking it up actually. It was a venue called Hosoi, and it was in the hotel at 6, and it was a very intimate gig. And I was here in 2019. And I was, and Robin said, "Do you want to go to a gig?" And I said, "Yeah, of course." But who's the artist? And Robin said, "Beverly Glenn Copeland." And I said, "Oh, I don't know them, but I trust you, Robin." So I'm so happy that I went, because the performance was incredible. And this song, La Vita, is really took my breath away. And, you know, hearing Glenn sing the lyric, "My mother says to me, enjoy your life," just completely moved me so much and stayed with me. And has inspired my own song Enjoy Your Life. So if it wasn't for coming to Stockholm and for spending time with Robin, I never would have made that song. So I thanked Robin in my album credits for that. My mother says to me, enjoy your life.
My mother says to me. And you sample like a slice of the vocals here on your title track.
Yes.
You didn't ask him to re-record it or anything. It's actually the...
Yes.
The vocals from...
Yes.
His recording from 2004.
Yeah. We were very grateful that Glenn allowed us to have the vocal samples, and Stuart Price was able to sort of work, who was one of the producers on the album, was able to work with Glenn's vocal stem and kind of create this call and response moment on midair, and it kind of feels like my dream duet that we're having, and it was very moving for me to be able to experience that, like when I heard it and it felt like we were in the same room. It was very special to me, and you know, I really, really wanted to have Glenn's voice on the album to really show where this inspiration had come from, and to, you know, give more of a, you know, the way that I'd been introduced to his music, I hope I could introduce more people as well.
And this track on your album, the title track, works kind of as an intro to your song Enjoy Your Life.
Yes.
But when I listened to it, I thought that, you know, that was something that your mother had said to you.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that it was a sample, but maybe she did say the same thing to you.
I think what resonated with me when I heard that line is, you know, that kind of, you know, my mum died when I was 11 and my dad when I was 20. So I have experienced loss at a young age of like my parents and thinking a lot about.
That's horrible, losing both your parents when you're 20.
Yeah.
You know, that's rough.
No, it was, I mean, I don't know any different, to be honest, but it has been, you know, it's been really hard. And I think that it's made me experience life in a way where I feel like life is short. And I've seen
that. Do you
have
any brothers and sisters?
No.
Oh.
I have my aunties, like, and I'm very close with my cousin, and I have like a wonderful family that, you know, we make our own kind of, it's like unconventional, not, you know, not your typical setup, but there's a lot of love and I'm very so grateful for them. But I think that it made me just sort of see life in a way where I wanted to make the most of things. You know, life is short. In these moments of loss, it kind of become moments of clarity. And it's easy to think, oh, I want to make the best of everything. You know, I want to live life to the full. But that's not always easy. You know, some days it's harder than others to think like that. But, you know, I was thinking about how one of my aunties lives with such positivity. You know, she has bad things happen to her, and she tries to see the good in things. And I admire that. And when I heard the lyrics to La Vita, Glenn's song, with that simple lyric, my mother says to me, enjoy your life, it really took me back to this feeling of acknowledging that life is short, wanting to try and live it to the best. You know, and for me, it felt like a reminder. And I thought that I actually need that reminder sometimes. And to include it in my own song has been very special, to kind of keep that intention in me. This is Madonna with Get Together.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is from Confessions on a Dance Floor, which I probably think is their best album, actually.
It's an incredible album. Yeah, I agree.
Did you get to see her when she went on tour this year?
Yes, I literally just I saw her play on Monday in Paris, and it was incredible. I'd been to see her in London, and I was just happy to be there, but I was very far away, so I was experiencing the show kind of, you know, sort of. I could only see her like a tiny ant. And my wife Vic and I bought tickets to go to Paris because we were able to get ones like that were standing, so we wanted to be closer to the action. And I was speaking to Stuart Price, who is
who works with
Madonna, and his work on, you know, he produced Confessions on a Dance Floor with Madonna, and is an album I was on a lot of my reference playlists. So when I was making this album, Midair, it felt like people were suggesting to me, why don't you talk to Stuart? So we ended up becoming friends really quickly, and we really bonded over our love of pop music and dance music. And yeah, I've loved working with him. And then, so then he told me that he was working on Madonna's show and that he was going to be DJing in Paris. And I said, oh, I'm going. And then, so he said, let's meet up. So he gave us a special pass. So Vic and I were able to be right in the kind of inner circle, and we were so close to the stage. It was, a real dream come true for me, honestly. And Vic is like, you know, she was just like grinning and smiling and like freaking out the whole time. She was having the best time, so we were really happy.
I missed this tour, unfortunately, but I saw the first concert on the Confessions on a Dance Floor tour.
Oh, wow.
In 2006, when she played the Forum in Los Angeles.
Wow, cool. And
it was amazing to see, like, drag queens from Beverly Hills.
Oh yeah,
and,
cool.
You know, this whole there was this whole community that really, you know, went out in full force when Madonna was in town.
Oh yeah, I think that energy is still. I think she still commands that, and like she's a queer icon, and like I would have loved to have seen that Confessions tour. It's on YouTube, actually. I've been meaning to watch it, so that's a good touring thing to watch, maybe.
I remember when I first heard the XX, I was surprised that you were like 20 years old, maybe 19. Mm-hmm. I don't remember, but I was struck by, you know, I couldn't believe that someone so young could sing about love with that kind of hopelessness. Because, you know, normally you don't find that hopelessness until maybe your second divorce.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that I've always been drawn to romance, to longing, to lyrics, poetry. I don't know. I think it's at the time when we were writing that first album, I feel like I was, you know, kind of experiencing my first sort of relationships and like. Yes, I wouldn't say it was going that well. So I had quite a lot to write about. I was feeling quite a lot of heartache. And Oliver says that at the time he was also writing a lot from his imagination. Like he hadn't had so many experiences of love then. So he was sort of imagining his hopes and his sort of dreams about it. So between us, we were kind of writing around like fantasy and the reality and those early experiences of love.
It's funny how a lot of people assumed that you were a couple, but that you were so shy that you didn't really dare to sing to each other on stage. So you had always a big distance between each other on stage, and people were standing there going like, oh, but they're in love, but they're too afraid to say so.
No, I can, it's funny thinking of like what people would have, the kind of narrative that they might have put in. But yeah, it's, I loved that we kind of embraced that as well. You know, we kind of left it open to interpretation. But yeah, in reality, he's like my brother.
What was it like to find, you know, tremendous success when you were almost a teenager?
A shock. I think none of us really like even dared to dream that it would be.
So you really blew up. You know, you toured.
Yeah,
everywhere.
It was amazing. We had an amazing time, and like, just, you know, I think at that age, you know, we really like threw ourselves into it. Like, we just said yes to things and just went along for the ride. And like, you know, we started off in that tour, sort of staying in hostels and like just playing in small clubs. And by the end of that album tour, it was amazing to play some really special big venues. It was all incredible. But you know, in that year of, when I think about 2010, it's like one of the best years of my life and one of the hardest years of my life. That's the year that my dad died and my cousin died. And I also had the most success with the music. And my family had this experience of loss and pride. And there was a lot of, it was a big contrast. So
how did you find out that your father had died?
I was on tour in Paris. And
you had a show the same night?
The night before, yeah.
Oh.
So I found out in the morning, and I just through my family, and I took some time off, and I think in that moment I thought to myself, like, what do I do? Do I stop? And then I had a show coming up in London that I was really looking forward to, that I know that he had been really excited about, and I thought to myself, I think he would want me to do it. And so I did it, and then we kind of just carried on for the rest of the year. And I think in a way, for me, having something that I loved and was so excited about in my life with the band was so special and helped me so much at a time that was so difficult. But I think, you know, it's hard because it didn't really, I think later on is when I'm more like could process the loss. But at the time, I know anyone I've spoken to that's experienced that loss, it's sort of having that other distraction or something to be able to like keep you going can be very helpful at the time.
But sometimes like grief sort of grows upon you, and then you're hit hard by it like years later.
Yeah,
it just shows up again.
Yeah, no, I definitely experienced that, yeah.
One of your most famous fans was Beyoncé. You covered her song, I Miss You.
Yeah.
Did you get to meet her as well?
Yes, I can't really believe that I can say that, but yes, we have met, and we did these shows in New York at the Park Avenue Armory. It's an amazing large space we were given the opportunity to just do something creative in. And we did this show where we sort of played with the perception of space and like size of venue and intimacy. And when we did this show for like, it was for an intimate audience of 40 people a time, I think it was 40. And
that was before COVID.
Yes.
You didn't have to do it like that, but yes. You did anyway.
Yeah, wanted to, and so we performed in the middle and the audience stood around us, and then the sort of the walls of this room kind of fell away, and then they realized they were in a big space. And we did this, it was like almost like a theater show, like two times a night in a row. And it seemed that word of mouth grew and more people wanted to come and see it. So then all of a sudden we were kind of finding out that more other musicians and other people we admired wanted to come and see it, and we thought, we can't believe this. And you know, to sort of look out very shyly and this small group of people around me and see Beyonce and Jay-Z there is a feeling I will never forget.
So those 40 people were like Beyonce and Jay-Z and their entourage?
No, they were like they crept in, and they were there with other people who had bought tickets. I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but there was a list of people that I admire greatly that came, and I still can't believe that's real.
Let's name drop a little. Who came?
Bjork, Madonna. There's a few that I'm just like blown away by.
That's some guest list.
Yes, it was honestly feels like I'm talking about a fantasy when I say that. But that was a few years ago now. So, but yeah, I had the opportunity to meet some of them afterwards and thank them for coming. And it was fascinating speaking to them.
Do you feel like talking?
This is Fred again with Me Heavy.
sort of warped strings.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful song.
Fred again is one of your producers.
I met Fred when I started getting into pop songwriting for other artists, which is something that I'd been curious to do as a way to be creative outside of the XX. And we got sort of match made together. At the time, he hadn't released any of his solo music, and he was producer and songwriter for other artists, and we met in a very low pressure environment, and we just really had an instant connection, and it was just really fun writing songs with him. And we kept saying, well, who can sing this, and I wasn't in those sessions thinking secretly I wish it was me. I was genuinely there thinking this is a creative output and a way for me to learn. But if over time I started to feel more ready to like have something to say personally, and at the same time, Fred was starting to play me the music he was making, and it was just really exciting to hear. And I really love his voice, and I was saying, oh, I hope you sing more. So I chose this song because it's a song where he sings. He uses a lot of amazing vocal samples of other artists, but I do think it's lovely to hear his voice. My baby's healed.
Before my knees. Fred again is an interesting artist name.
Yeah.
Do you know how he came up with it?
I don't actually know. I think maybe a friend might have said it to him.
It's Fred again.
Yeah. But I'm so proud of him. It's absolutely amazing to see his success. I'm so tired of being strong. I found
you exploding. You mentioned the club, the ghetto, where you went as a teenager. Mm-hmm. You actually met your wife there once. You kind of became a couple when you were very young.
Yeah. Yeah, we...
You reunited.
Yeah.
Years later.
We met actually at a gig I was playing. She was there to see the band that were headlining, and we were opening.
And you were opening for...
Ipso Facto.
Oh.
They were, I definitely would look them up. They're a cool band. They looked great. Really liked the music. But yeah, Vic was a fan of them, and we were supporting. And at the time, we were not used to people being very energetic in the crowd. And like Vic and her friends were quite drunk and were like being quite fun in the crowd. And I got speaking to her afterwards, and we had a relationship at the time. We did go to that club ghetto together, and but then we lost touch. It didn't work out. It was a source of some songwriting for me back then.
So she both inspired your sad songs about having a broken heart and your happy songs on the new record about being in love.
Yeah, she's definitely inspired some of the songs on the first XX album, and then is the main source of inspiration for Midair. Yeah,
it's interesting because it's you've sort of switched the audio, because normally someone would write happy songs when they first meet someone, and then the sad songs come after the divorce or the breakup or whatever. But
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a complicated time. We were like 19 and 20, and I think it was very more like high intensity emotions for me back then. But it was lovely to have the opportunity to re-meet someone that you had loved and like lost, I guess, at that earlier stage in life, and then for us both to have experienced more life and more experiences, and to re-meet as we both were turning 30. And to have another opportunity at the relationship was very inspiring to me lyrically.
And what's it been like for her to have so many beautiful songs written about her? she's your muse.
Yeah, I love being able to share that with her. And like, she has an amazing taste in music. That's one of the reasons that we first connected, is we've just played each other songs all the time. So, she's also someone that I want I trust her opinion, you know, her taste. So when I play her something, I hope that she likes it just as a music fan. And then I have to remember sometimes, oh yeah, this song is actually about her. So maybe she's feeling a bit embarrassed or, but no, she's been like very excited.
Love Her is such a beautiful tribute where you're saying, I don't want to control her. I don't want to change her or suffocate her. I just want to love her. It seems as if, you know, that song, or that you're aware of how when you fall in love, you kind of project a lot of stuff on someone. And then when they fail to meet your expectations and don't look like your fantasy, you become disappointed. But it's as if you're aware of that.
Yeah, I think at this point, I'm aware of that. And it's interesting you picked up on that. This is Fruit by Oliver Sim.
Far too thin, surrounded by rocks, you're gonna look the gem. You can dress it away, talk it away, dull down the flame, but it's all pretend.
This is from his first solo album, Hideous Bastard.
Yeah.
Nice title. This song, he sings about, it sounds as if he's singing about being scared of coming out of the closet somehow,
mm-hmm.
tasting the forbidden fruit.
Yeah.
Like embracing the love that dare not speak its name.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's a beautiful track.
Yeah, I think this is one of my favorite songs from that album. And, you know, it was amazing for me to hear, you know, after years of Oliver and I writing together, and you know, it was really inspiring for me to hear the music that Oliver like makes, you know, without me involved at all. And like, just it was lovely to just, you know, just be a fan and just to listen and admire it. Oliver and Jamie made this album together, and in a kind of loving way, I wasn't involved, and I think that was a good thing. And I really, this song is, I think, just like lyrically a very beautiful and poetic description of kind of that contrast between like embracing inner pride as well as kind of acknowledging some sort of inner shame, and sort of just the poetic way that he's able to like talk about some things that are, I've seen as his friend, be pretty heavy for him in his life throughout this album, is like, it really blew me away when I heard it.
How come Brian Eno has a production credit on the title track on your album?
Because
did he work on it?
At that time, Fred and Brian Eno have known each other for a long time, and yeah, when we were making Midair, Fred was kind of inspired to use some sounds and like you know, some plugins and different things that he'd got from Brian. And like I think they worked on it some more together, and it's kind of linked that way.
Your mother was a teacher, and your father worked in a library for some time.
Yep.
Did they make you read a lot of books when you were a kid?
Yes, I was a very only child, and I was definitely very introverted, and I spent a lot of time reading and drawing by myself. And there's always, yeah, books and records. And it reminds me, I like seeing all of your books and records and CDs here. It feels like very much like what my house was like when I was growing up.
What writers meant the most to you?
Gosh, I think that I was really drawn to poetry, really. And I think I still am. There isn't like one. I feel like it's more, I'll be honest with you, it's like lyric, like songwriters have meant more to me in a way. So I fell in love with reading, but then I would say that I became more obsessed with lyrics and like obsessed with like songwriters at quite a young age.
And which songwriters did you like?
I'm
Appreciate.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. The you know, my dad introduced me to Nick Drake, and you know, I think those sort of like singer songwriter, more like thoughtful, kind of dreamy writers. You know, Joni Mitchell, and my mum listened to a lot of Dionne Warwick. So there's a lot of Burt Bacharach and like kind of soulful but like storytelling songs, and yeah, there was just always music playing in my house, and like very eclectic, and I just think I was always curious about the words, so I was always listening to that. This is ABBA with Lay All Your Love on Me.
Have you been to see the hologram show in London?
Yes.
What was it like?
I mean, have you seen it?
I haven't, but people say that they're not holograms, they're avatars.
Yeah. I really recommend it. I absolutely loved it. Vic is a huge fan as well. She has an ABBA tattoo.
There's an ABBA tattoo?
Yeah.
That's hardcore.
Yeah. So we had to go. It was like, and it was amazing. And the moment that the sort of curtains open, so to speak, and they come out, I was like, I was a bit speechless. I was standing in the crowd, and you feel very much like you're at the show. So,
do they look like actual people?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, yeah. Depends how many drinks you've had, maybe. But I thought it was brilliant, and I'm a really big fan, and I think that I went to the ABBA Museum in Stockholm as well when I was here with Vic, and we had a lot of fun there. So yeah, I'm a big fan.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I have a couple of questions from my listeners, and not just any listeners, but the brave souls who support this podcast through Patreon. The first question is from Magnus Dunberg, who lives in the tiny village Åseda. What inspires you?
That's a great question. I think that people inspire me the most, and like just observe. I've always been a bit more of like an observer, maybe not quite as much in the creepy stalking way and dancing on my own, but no, I've always been someone that's like kind of been take a step back and observe the interactions between people, and to sort of try and document that and try and convey the things through words has been easier for me sometimes than speaking up about them in the moment. So I sometimes have an experience and feel like, oh, I wish I'd said this to that person. So then I'll go away and write the song and be like, this is what I meant to say. So I think, yeah, I think people and a way of expressing myself.
Do you take notes, you know, on how people behave and what they do to...
Can you turn
those notes into songs later?
It's sort of maybe more subconsciously. I take notes at gigs, at other people's gigs. I find them quite inspiring. And I realize if I'm in a crowd, maybe it would look like I'm bored and I'm texting my friend. But actually I'm sort of writing down notes. Like if I hear a lyric, or maybe I mishear a lyric and I think, oh, that's a nice word, I note it down.
The second question is from Peter Altsen, who is a punk rocker and lives in Gävle. Will there be any more records by the XX?
Yes, definitely. We've already been back in the studio, and it's been really exciting. I think that we all acknowledged and kind of respected that we kind of all individually needed a bit of time to grow and experience new experiences. And for me, I just like learning. So I really loved learning a lot more about production and songwriting and collaboration. So then I've brought those things that I've learned back to the studio with the XX, and it's been really fun. And so Oliver and Jamie have both brought back their experiences. So
it's nice that all three of you have had like successful solo careers, because a lot of times when you're in a band, you know, there's one or maybe two people who, you know, can go solo, but the others don't.
Yep.
But and in your case, the drummer was the first one to really become huge.
Yeah, I'm so proud of Jamie. It's amazing to me. And, you know, I think that it made a lot of sense to me, because he was always producing and like making his own music alongside the music of the XX. So it felt very natural to me that he would do that. But I think for Oliver and I don't think either of us ever planned to go solo. But I think actually it's been really great for us to express some different things and to then individually let people who might know the XX more as just a unit, to let people get to know us as individuals. So the next time we make an album, maybe they'll have a different context.
What do you do for Christmas now?
Well, it feels very Christmassy here, which is really nice. I am looking forward to going home. Just be with my family, be with my wife's side of the family as well, which has been, you know, coming from a small family now myself, my wife has a very big family, so it's nice to all be together at Christmas. And right after Christmas, I will go to Australia to play some gigs. So I'm making the most of the kind of wintry feeling, and then I'm excited to have some sunshine.
What's on your Christmas wish list?
World peace, to be honest. I don't think I can ask.
What a sensible answer.
I don't need any presents. I think just being together and genuinely mean that about peace for the world. But it's I think in these moments where things are difficult and upsetting in the world, I think being together and sharing love is the best that we can do.
Great final words. Well, Merry Christmas, Romy. Thanks for coming here, and thanks for all the great music.
Thank you.
She's on my mind every hour of every day.
Den här podcasten producerades av Daniel Bäckström för Lejon Media. Romy var hemma hos Dragan.